Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It will be a fight.
And there'll be a lot of death, unfortunately.
It will be a fight we will win.
But a lot less death. But there will be death.
People should be actually kept out of the country for at least 28 days.
America is not prepared.
G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Butterfield Effect. My name's Isaac Butterfield, and welcome back for another fantastic week of talking absolute bullshit about everything that's happening in the world. Now, as a lot of you would be very, very aware, the last week or so for me has been an interesting one indeed. Now, It has been very, very strange. It really, really has. So basically, if you don't know what has happened, there's a joke that I have done, and you can see it on these videos on my channel, the one about being cancelled. Go back and check that out if you're not familiar with it. But there was a joke I did about the New Zealand massacre, a horrible massacre that happened about a year and a half ago. And there's a joke that I did. people were saying it was far too soon. Well, the clip that you saw was filmed about 8-9 months after it happened, but I actually did that joke for the first time about 3 days after it happened. And a lot of people have been saying, hey, it's too soon, it's insensitive, it's racist. And to those people, I basically outlaid in the video that I made, it's obvious it's a joke, it's not real, it's pretend, it's make-believe, it's fiction. And if you can't understand that, then you're a very strange individual. You see, that the big thing with comedy is when you enter a comedy room or a nightclub that's turned into a comedy room or a theater that is a comedy room for that night, you enter into an agreement with the act that, particularly if you know the act, like if you know that you're going to see Jim Jefferies, you know it's going to be offensive. You go see Jimmy Carr, you know it's going to be offensive. You go see, you know, any Melbourne comedian, you know it's going to be shit. Or any other Australian comedian, you know they're just going to talk about how bad the trams are or how fucking exciting. But when you go and see me, you know I'm going to try and push the boundaries. And that's what I do. And that's what I did. And I think that if you can't deal with that and you can't understand that I don't mean the things that I say on stage, then that is on you. You are the one who has been offended. I'm not the one dealing out the offense in this case. Now, a lot of the people who saw that clip, they saw it for the very first time in their hands, a clip that was stolen from my website and re-uploaded by a gentleman. And he made some very clear points about what he thought about the joke. But I think the big thing that I really came and hit me pretty hard was like, these guys are really looking into this joke. This was just a passing comment. It wasn't like I didn't do a 10-minute bit on it. It was a 30-second bit at most. Now, the big thing about all of what has happened is when you're in a comedy room, as I said, you hear horrible jokes, but you take them as comedy because that's what you're there for. Whereas what unfortunately took place for a lot of people, particularly a lot of Muslim people, a lot of people who had never heard of me before, or maybe they did, they saw this clip for the first time, you know, making dinner or sitting on the lounge, and they see it with, you know, all the subtitles at the top saying, hey, you got to see this guy, he's horrible, he's mean, he's terrible. And they watch and they go, yeah, he is horrible, mean and terrible. And that was the first time they ever witnessed anything from me. And I guess that's why it went so viral. On the Monday and the Tuesday last week, I received 48,000 DMs, angry DMs, countless DMs on Twitter, on Instagram. It was 580,000 people went to my Instagram, and I only got like an extra 1,000 followers. It was all hate. But you know, as cancel culture often does, it explodes and then disappears. And that is what has happened here. And this is the way to deal with cancel culture. If you are being canceled, don't apologize. Refuse to apologize, particularly if you know you've done nothing wrong, which I had. I was very aware that I did nothing wrong. I told a joke. There is no point in apologizing. All that does is give cancel culture more fucking ground to work on. And this is like even Ryan Reynolds, right? He had to apologize the other week because he had his wedding on a piece of land that used to be a plantation where slaves had to do work without pay, and they'd been taken from their homes and sold off to the white people. And he had to apologize because he had his wedding there. That's not his fault. Who is he to apologize about that? That's fucking ridiculous. So there's a lot of different topics that this conversation brings up, whether it's free speech, whether it's the freedom to make jokes, whether it's is every joke about a particular race or about someone who you think is stereotypically something is racist. You know, it brings that conversation up. And I don't think jokes can be overtly racist. There's no hate. There was no hate. There's no hatred or no intent or no, you know, I was not intending to be hateful in that joke. It's merely a joke. And the fact that we're still talking about it is pretty outrageous. One of the things, and the reason I wanted to do this podcast with this gentleman that we're going to have on today, is because I had a lot of comedians come after me as well. I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying, this guy, he's an open mic comic talking about me. How does he get an audience with shit jokes on that, like that? A lot of people from Melbourne upset in comedy forums and all this type of shit. But there has been one man that I have seen consistently speak out against the enormous wave of political correctness that has hit comedy. And he is someone who is in Melbourne at the moment and is around the Melbourne comedy scene, and he's outspoken about that particular scene. I thought he would be a great person to have onto the show. He's been involved in the comedy game in Australia for about 25 years now. He was on Rove Live back in the day. He's a very good individual, a very funny man, an offensive man himself. And first time I saw him was probably about 5 or 6 years ago live, and I thoroughly enjoyed what this big dog had to offer. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show for the very first time, Mr. Chris Wainhouse. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Wainhouse, how you doing, big fella?
Good, man. How are you?
Very well, very well. Now, you just said before the show started, you're in Melbourne. How's life down there under severe lockdown regulations?
It's crazy. It's a lot of drinking. Curfews are weird. I didn't mind lockdown. Gave me time to just jump on the PlayStation, and it came right at the festival time, so it was nice to sort of get a break from comedy.
Yeah.
But I'm getting over it now.
Yeah, I got a bit of gaming in, and I'm not much of a gamer. I was playing The Last of Us 2. Have you?
Oh yeah, part of that? Yeah. I've got it. I haven't played a lot of it.
It's good. I enjoyed the first version of it, The Last of Us, the original. I thought that was really, really good. And I only just recently played that. Like, it was probably, you know, 6 or 8 months ago. And so I was really excited to see the second one come out. Unfortunately, it wasn't as good. Obviously, things are difficult to live up to in the sequel. But they went a very strange, and I won't spoil it for you, but they went in a very strange direction with it. So a lot of the people...
I want to get that Skater FL or XL.
What's that?
There's a skateboard game. Did you ever play Skate, the old one?
Yeah, I think so.
Fucking brilliant. But this one apparently is just a glitchy mess. So
right.
I'm glad I didn't fork out the $80.
Well, I remember that was like my big game was like Tony Hawk Pro Skater, those type of things back in the day. They were the best. I remember there was some cheat code you could do, and you could just like you defy gravity and you'd be up in the air and you just hit and kick flips and three. Who fucking knows?
Yeah, Moon Physics, it was called.
It was what?
Moon Physics.
Moon Physics, right. Mate, I used to hit some mad scores on that. Like the one where you run out like a bull's chasing you. Do you remember that level? A bull's chasing you around and you get... Anyway, mate, what a great game.
It was a good game. Skate was the best. Skate 3 was the best ever skate game, but...
Yeah, I mean, since Red Dead Redemption came out, there's particularly first-person shooters and games where, you know, they have to have a storyline. And I think that's what they did with The Last of Us 2. It was amazing. It looked amazing, but the story let it down a little bit. But anyway, I'll let you decide that for yourself.
Okay, well, I'll give it a go. Yeah.
Give it a go. Why not? There's nothing else to do. So in Melbourne at the moment, it's are people scared, do you think?
Look, I really don't go out. I go out for groceries, alcohol runs, cigarettes, and pretty much leave it at that. So there's nothing out there, and it's fucking freezing too. So,
well, that's what I didn't get the whole, because right now you're locked down between what 8 and 5 a.m.
8 and 5 a.m.
I don't understand, like, why? Like, what is there to do at between eight and five a.m.? Everything's closed.
Well, there's nothing open, right? Yeah. Like, so it's pointless. I think the idea is to keep everyone within their 5K limit,
right?
Which stops. So if at least it's confined to that area, I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, it's
the numbers. The deaths are through the roof. 17 today. I think it's the highest day ever. So,
right,
crazy.
And I was reading that a 30-year-old died this week, which obviously is horrible. I'm not sure if he was the gentleman or there was another 30-year-old that died, and that was the newspaper headline. They said 30-year-old dies of coronavirus. And in the comments section, everyone's like, this is so – and it's become a political issue, which is strange.
Yeah.
You know, this is so more dangerous. Why aren't people taking this seriously? And then it turns out that the newspaper's not reporting it correctly. The guy had stage 4 cancer at the exact same time, and it's
okay,
what really took this guy out, because he's stuck in hospital, he's in he's in all his body's going into failure, and unfortunately, and I think even I may be wrong here, but I remember reading that George Floyd's death went down as a coronavirus death, even though it was he was basically choked out.
Yeah, okay,
but he had I could be talking absolutely out of my ass here, but he had coronavirus. I know that for a fact. He had coronavirus, and he was killed whilst having that. So that goes down as a coronavirus death. So,
he did have the virus.
Yeah.
Is that the reports? Wow. I didn't know that.
So this new video came out about George Floyd this week. I think the Daily Mail, one of the greatest purveyor of news in the world, they came out with the whole video from the body cam with the police. And it was interesting. I don't think that it'll get the main dude off the first degree murder charge, but it may get the other guys off. Basically, what was happening was, so there was a counterfeit bill involved in a shop. The police get called. They go to the car where George Floyd is. They pull him out. And at this point, he's panicking. He's freaking out. People were saying, I was watching someone on YouTube talking about it, saying that the autopsy report and the coroner reported that he was high on fentanyl at the time. Now, whether that is true or not, the information's out there for someone to find. So he was in a very bad way. They go to put him in the back of the police car, and he starts freaking out, and he starts being extremely concerned with being claustrophobic. And before the police even touch his face, neck, back, anything, he starts going, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, and yelling. And the officers are saying, hey, we're going to put the window down for you, it's going to be okay. And then it progresses from there to old mate having his knee in the back of his neck. And I just wonder if that's going to put a question or a question mark in the jury's mind when it comes to putting this those police officers away if they do end up being jailed. I really think it does start to ask a few questions.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, there's the definite care of duty lost by the dude with the knee on his neck.
Yes.
But if you've been yelling, I can't breathe for God knows how long, then eventually you're just going to ignore it, aren't you?
Well, so I used to work in like pubs and clubs, and the old the adage was, if they can talk, they can breathe. And whether that is true, I have no idea.
Yeah.
There was another dude who died in custody, an Aboriginal gentleman, David Dungay. He was the video of him. That was what the protest was going to be for his family for in Sydney just a few weeks ago, that the Supreme Court put an injunction against. And they were saying, the video was suggesting that there was malpractice involved with the prison officers. And whether or not there is, like because you're holding someone down, and there is a chance that something bad will happen in that situation. And I guess the question that everyone sort of is asking is, with George Floyd and this other gentleman, would they have done that if they were white, instead of black? And was there malpractice in what they did? And I know from trying to hold people down when I was working in security, you know, holding someone who's in a big fight or whatever, people go fucking ballistic when they're trying to not be held down. So I don't know, but it certainly raises some interesting questions.
Well, it's a hard one, because I could only say, would I do it if they were black or white? I really don't know what another person would do. But if it was on video, like, you think that would be cut and dry, wouldn't you?
So with the Dungay's death, a nurse comes in and puts a sedative into his stomach or wherever she injects him. And there was a lot of people saying, this is disgusting. This man has been drugged. But is that's the procedure that they follow? Like, okay, if it is wrong, then okay, I'm happy to take that on the chin. But then, you know, there has to be a lot of changes put in place.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I would assume you would need a court order to drug someone, unless it is an emergency, like at a hospital or something. But to control someone, I would assume,
yeah,
that's a very fucking slippery slope, isn't it?
Well, I mean, both of these guys had violent pasts and they had been arrested for violent things, and maybe that weighs into it. As you said, yeah, you can only really answer for yourself if you do something differently, if someone's black or white. I don't know. I've had this argument with myself and on videos as well. It's like, who thinks about someone's color so much? But then you sort of got to be introspective about it and realize that, you know, just because you're not a racist doesn't mean they don't exist. They definitely exist. And that's something that I've brushed over. Sorry, say again.
Yeah, they most certainly exist.
Yeah, and that's something.
But I really believe they're few and far in between these days. It's not like the 40s and the 50s or fucking the early 1900s. You know, like it's as the world progresses, it gets more progressive.
Yeah,
should I say?
It's
never been a better time or a safer time for fucking anyone.
Anyone.
Real life.
Yeah, and it's one of the arguments that comes from the Black Lives Matter movement about Aboriginals in Australia. They talk about in the 60s they were declared, or they were classified as fauna, and which is horrible. But that was the 1960s. That's 60 years ago. Everyone who was making those decisions is now extremely old, and they're getting their comeuppance with coronavirus. So I guess fuck them.
Yeah.
But you know, I just don't think, and I'm on your side there, I just don't think that many people exist who still think like that. I just don't. I mean, no. I don't know.
And I guess you've got to be happy to see things getting better. Like, if things were getting worse, then it's the time to fucking bark up. But as things progressively get better, that's essentially what we want to do. It might not be as fast as we're hoping, but at least it's in the right fucking direction.
Mm. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I worry about with the attack on white people when it comes to just in general on the internet. Now, I know when I talk about this, people start going, oh, my God, you're a white crybaby, get over it. You know, there's no such thing as reverse white racism. Now, if someone calls me a white so-and-so, that doesn't affect me. But for some people who are boring on the edge of, you know, a supreme racist or just a normal everyday person, if you attack them so much, push them up against the wall, they might come out and retaliate. And that's a fucking bad thing.
Yeah. Well, it's any discrimination has got to be wrong, regardless of what it is. It's either all wrong or it's fucking none of it's wrong. So, you know, and it's almost like fighting discrimination with discrimination. It's the same with the when getting women into comedy, there was a lot of booting men out of comedy. That's kind of what they wanted to do. It's, well, not they, I'm getting a bit paranoid here, but well, an all-female lineup, as opposed, there's an all-female, all male lineup is a fucking accident.
Yeah.
Right, where all-female is contrived and planned, and so, like, if that's not sexist.
So on that, I mean, when I was doing open mics, like 5-6 years ago, not that long ago, I looked at the comedy scene in Australia, and this is one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on, because you're a veteran of the circuit. And I looked at the scene and I was like, man, I'm just some straight white dude who says offensive material. I've got no chance of being on Channel 10. So what's, you know what I mean? Like, that is such a difficult task for someone who looks like me and speaks like me. Like, I've tried to write clean material. I'm not clever enough. All right. That's just, I'm just not smart enough. So,
well, I don't write clean material either. But no, I don't like clean material.
No, nor do I. My brain doesn't work like that. But as a young person looking at that, I'm just like, well, where do I fit in here? And that's why I turned to the internet.
Yeah, well, there is no getting on the fucking Channel 10. I mean, we don't even have comedy on television anymore.
Mm.
There were, at least when I was coming through, there was Rove, so you could do a spot, and there was always that option, and they'd have one every week. So there's at least, 50 opportunities for a comedian. But and there was a couple of shows like that, but now there's nothing. There's no, if you do get on television, they've got you baking a fucking cake or doing anything other than what you're good at. You know, not highlighting your skills as a comedian.
And there's no, and when you do have the gala on Channel 10, it's all, and I always say it's the same jokes. It's not the same jokes, but it's a similar vein. Like there's no one pushing boundaries or running anything risky. And that's just not something that I overly enjoy. You know, when I started when I started watching stand-up, I was watching, you know, I was watching Billy Connolly. And then when I got older, I was watching like people like Jim Jefferies with Alcoholicost. I thoroughly enjoyed that special. Yeah. And that sort of gave me the idea of, okay, I can be an asshole, but if I write clever jokes, I can be an asshole on stage and get away with it.
Yeah, my character is a total dick. My character on stage, he's just a fucking dick, and that's what makes it funny.
Yeah.
It's so long as people... I think today, too, a lot of comics, a lot of people believe that what the comic is saying, they are actually that person. They believe that. And I guess to a certain extent, a lot of comics do, but for me, it's all fucking make-believe and hypotheticals and taking the piss out of myself or someone else.
Well, I guess here's a question for you, because I'll talk about what happened this week with Me Too in a moment, but not with Me Too. Thankfully, I haven't been Me Too'd yet. I'm sure there's time. Do you think in comedy you can punch down if it's funny?
Well, yeah, I absolutely.
Thank fuck.
I think you can do anything. I think it's the harder you go, the funnier it has to be. But you can do anything. I laugh at some of the darkest things. It's but then I grew up with baby jokes. Remember dead baby jokes?
Everywhere.
And they were fucking awful, but that's why they were funny.
Yes.
They were the absolute worst thing you could possibly say.
Hmm.
And it's what we laughed at.
Yeah, and it's like
shocking.
The way I tried to, and my big thing this week, if you haven't seen anything on my channel, is the I did a joke about the New Zealand massacre, a very full-on situation, and made light of it. Now, I said that, and when I wrote that, I thought to myself, fuck, that is so horrible and mean and rude, and I had that like sort of laugh in the back of my head. I was like, oh, fuck, people are going to fucking hate me for that. And then I go out and do it, and everyone has the same reaction. They go, oh, that's horrible, and then they laugh. I did that. Yeah. In Melbourne at the Comedy Festival last year, like I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks after it had taken place. And every single night people stopped, groaned and then started laughing and then had an applause break after every show. Now, I don't want to be a dickhead and say, oh, I got an applause break, but they did. And that proves the point that, yes, in fact, it was funny. People laughed at it. And that has to be the guide for what you tell on stage. If people laugh, then it's funny.
Well, I saw that bit and I saw it get a big laugh. What I think it means too, like some people won't find it funny, that's fine. But what you're doing is you're entertaining your audience. This idea that you have to also cater for an audience that isn't even in your audience is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like people who don't like the joke will never probably like your comedy anyway.
No.
Why pander to that if they're not going to see you?
Hmm.
This idea that we have to look out for an audience that's not even our fucking audience.
And
so find our own audience. I wouldn't, like if I turned up to you and saw, say, a Nanette, I'd be pissed off. I would expect dark comedy from. Oh. Or if you come to my show, my fans expect me to be wrong.
And that's what people expect from me now and have since they first saw me. When I first did my first tour around Australia, people weren't too sure because they'd only seen this dude on like the internet. Yeah. And then afterwards they're like, okay, we sort of get who he is, and I think that's important to sort of set. I mean, you know, I'll just tell jokes that I think are funny, regardless of whether they make people happy, sad, or whatever. But the thing that I think blew everything out of the water was the guy who shared it. He bought my special and then screen recorded it, and then posted it out on Twitter. So all these people who may happen to be Muslim or may happen to be New Zealanders who were affected by this horrible thing, they're just getting this sent to them or seeing it on their Instagram or in someone else's story. And all they're seeing is Isaac Butterfield, horrible man. They watch it and they go, yeah, he is a fucking horrible man. Like completely out of context.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. You've got to watch the whole show to get an idea of the character you're dealing with.
Hmm.
I mean, if you just watch the joke, it looks like it's a fucking TED talk and you're just saying something horrible.
Yeah.
If you watch the whole thing, you go, okay, this guy, that's what he does.
That's he the takes type of humor.
Yeah. I don't know. It really surprises me that people take humor so seriously. It's a joke. You don't have to laugh at it, but you don't get to bitch and moan about it either.
Some of the main offenders when it came to people who were really upset and people who really broke down the joke, which I was just fascinated by how many people broke it down syllables by syllable. I was like, fuck, I said it. And then I moved on within a second. It was a 10-second bit. Stop fucking looking at it that hard. Was other comedians, people from Sydney, main offenders from Melbourne, your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I know. They're fucking precious down here.
What's going on in Melbourne? That scene is just heinous.
The scene is fucking awful. Well, I came from Sydney. I started in Brisbane, lived in Sydney, moved down to Melbourne. Some really good comics down here, but a lot of shit too. It's a lot of very beige and vanilla. And the same old, same old. Everyone wants to get offended. Nothing gets me more angry than a comic telling me that I can't do a joke. It's like, fuck off. You're in the same business. Don't tell me what I'm doing. You decide not to do it. That's fine. But just let me do whatever I'm going to do.
Well, how does your humor go down there? Like, if you're offending people on stage, like, does that fly?
Well, I'm only work out in the burbs. The city's a fucking write-off for me. But then there's nowhere that really pays down here. You've got the Comics Lounge, great room.
Great room. Run by great people too.
And that's a great audience. It's blue collar. It's just a big mix.
Mm.
So you can do pretty much anything there, but get into these tiny little open mic nights. They don't pay, so I can't be fucked doing them anyway. But and it's not my audience. It's really not my audience. They're offended easily. It's just too much for me.
Oh, it's I've only done rooms that aren't my audience a couple of times. I did it in Perth, and a mate of mine, who I'm sure you know, Kyle Legacy. He stitched me up, and I was on my way to the gig. He just said, "Do you want a spot?" I said, "Oh, okay, sure." And he stitched me up and told the crowd, "Listen, whatever he says, he thinks he's a big shot. Don't laugh at a thing he says. Just keep your face completely still, no laughing." And I get up and I do bits that I know were working. I'd just done a run of like 12 shows or whatever in Perth, and I knew it was going to work. And I get up and this chick's just staring at me, just through every bit. She's like just staring at me, like with a big sad face. And I just treat her like someone in my show. I was like, geez, you're a real cunt, you know? And her friends looked at her like, oh my God. I was like, oh, you've never been called a cunt before. This has never happened in your life.
I don't think half these people have been in a fucking fight.
I know. That's the thing. Like, they're just not in the real world. It doesn't exist.
I think that's the whole problem with this cancel culture now. It's not so much that. It's that we live in a society where we just want to fucking dob on people. We want to, if someone does something wrong, we just want to tell everyone about it and see how much trouble we can get some dude into. That means fuck all to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just put a dob on them. Let's see how much trouble we can cause.
Well, that's exactly what happened with mine. So mine blew up. I had 48,000 DMs on Instagram, like mad numbers. Crazy. And then, but you look at
and awful stuff too, isn't it?
Oh, you know, the one thing that got me was, I know I talk about feminism and misogyny and all that type of shit, and half the time it's bullshit, but the misogynistic shit that people would send, like, I'm going to kill your wife, I'm going to rape your daughter. I'm just like, whose first response is that? Like, when you say something you don't like, who the fuck puts that out there?
Because someone said something they didn't think was nice. So that's their go-to.
What a crazy reaction.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's all that. It's like, what? What type of mental midget would even think that's a just run out of the box?
And then it's a lot of young kids that are talking like that too, and they've been brought up in cancel culture to know that if you hear something, as you said, if you hear something you don't like, the best thing to do about it is to dob, whinge, and make as much noise as possible. But I think that that's a concern for areas like Sydney and Melbourne, and for scenes like the comedy scene. Like, man, I don't know. I did an open mic night. I was just desperate to get on stage in Newcastle. It was a good night. I tried a new 20 minutes, probably about 12 of it bombed extremely hard. I kept 8, which I was very happy about. I hadn't been on stage in like 6 months. And then I see on Twitter last week, some dude tagging me saying, oh, he was at this open mic night and he did a joke about how Harvey Weinstein's the girl that he sexually assaulted, actually got a pretty good deal out of it, and he's a piece of shit. And I'm just like, what, you're dobbing me for that? Like, I don't mean that shit. Are you serious? Like, what the fuck?
He's getting the rough gist of what you said, right? He's missing the wording. It's taken a rough idea of it. It's these fucking idiots. It's like, God.
You won't win.
No, it's I've got a couple of clubs here where if I want to try material, I go. If that scene ever fucking cranks up again.
Yeah.
I do most of my stuff overseas, or I do comedy on the ships and all that sort of stuff. Or just out of Melbourne. Comics lounges, or out in the country, a lot of country gigs, and they're really good. Country people are just great, and they take a joke.
They
just get it's a joke.
Yeah.
They're not offended. Like, hey, you cheeky bastard. That's all they're thinking.
Mate, if you go, like, Queensland, where you're from, they're fine.
Yeah.
They're perfectly fine. Not a worry. You can say anything. Sydney, it's sort of just the more south you get, the more, like, they start to freak out a little bit. You know, Sydney's not too bad. Depends which suburb you're in, I guess. And then you go to Melbourne. If you're in the CBD, people are just freaking the fuck out. That's why I just try and play the Comics Lounge or whenever, when I'm down there, just so that...
Well, it's the only place to play in Melbourne. It really is the only decent room.
Yeah.
And the only one that pays.
Yes. But their attitude, like, they messaged me during the week and they're just like, don't worry about these fucking idiots, you know?
Yeah.
And that's their attitude with comedy, because they know who I am as a person. They're, you know, I've had not a heap of time with them, but, you know, a couple of hours here or there after shows, and they know that I'm not some fucking asshole. And so they look at me and they go, okay, well, he's just joking. He's a comic at the end of the day. He can say whatever the fuck he wants. And
I just said there should be room for dark comedy.
Yeah.
There's definitely a need for it. It's I understand if someone doesn't want to be a dark comedian or doesn't want to watch dark comedy, but that doesn't mean other people don't get to. You don't cancel something because you don't like it.
Like, if you're around your mates, like, the jokes that get my mates laughing the most are the most heinous shit imaginable.
The stuff that gets my wife laughing is the most heinous shit.
Yeah.
Possible, you know, and her back to me too.
Yeah, exactly.
We know we're kidding.
Yeah.
And we can't say anything.
Exactly. You know, and that's the same thing. When you enter that contract with someone, you know that, okay, they aren't a crazy person. Like, if I was, as you said, doing a TED talk and I brought that bit up, then okay, I deserve to have a lot of fucking hate given my way.
Yeah.
But when it's all pretend and make-believe, it's all good. How can you be bad?
I think so. It's I hate the idea that there's any restriction on comedy. I think some topics some comics can't talk about because they don't have the skills to talk about it. But if you're a good comic, I don't really see there's anything you can't talk. Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
He'll do fucking anything, and he's great.
Mm. And that's like, that's never, sorry.
People still offend it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. He doesn't care.
But that's the point. If the point is to be offensive with those type of jokes, you know they're offensive. That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
And I said this the other day. It's like it's almost a competition with when you're doing a show of where you go to as far as how far you go with certain jokes. And it's up to the audience whether or not they're funny. And a good comic will test something out, realize that no one laughs, whether it's offensive or clean as fuck, and then throw it away. I think a lot of people in Melbourne and in Sydney, and I've seen it in open mic scenes, they do 5 minutes 1 week, it bombs hard, and they do the same 5 minutes the next week and the same 5 minutes. You've got to be a good comic and let shit go. If it doesn't work, fuck it off. or rewrite it?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, I think. I think it's writing material, but also honing material.
Sure.
Because jokes, they evolve. I have 10-minute bits that started as a one-liner.
Yeah.
And just throughout my career, when I'm going through a mental block or something, I'll just go to something that's already working and just add to it.
Yeah.
Because it's already there. The idea's there. Coming up with a premise, I could sit all day and not even come up with a fucking premise.
Yeah.
But when you've got one, just jump on the back of it.
The premise that I used for the closer in last year's special, in Antihero, it was something I wrote and I performed the first time I ever met you. And I don't know if you remember this at all, but it was at the Sydney Fringe Festival in probably 2016, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I came to see, I was doing a show and I would come and watch your show before mine. And it was a Wednesday night out, is it Marrickville out there? And we had two people in our audience. It was a great night. But a joke I did there, which just didn't do well. Like I was only into stand-up for like 2 or 3 years at this point.
Yeah.
That ended up being, once I worked out how it worked and how to work it in with what I was doing, that came to be my closer for last year's show. And it's funny how something that sticks around for long enough and you work on it long enough,
yeah,
it becomes something.
And also, there's some jokes that you write that don't work. And if you shell them later on in your career, once you've got you learn the skills how to, you go, oh, fuck, I know, of course that joke didn't work. I'm delivering it like an idiot. It's I've got to put this first and that. And then you just go, oh, fuck, it's so easy. And then it becomes a great joke, a brand new joke almost.
Yes. Well, like the whole thing with the bit that went viral and the cancellation bit, the thing about the Christchurch thing, like the preceding that was reasons why people had tried to cancel me in the past.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And that was thrown in. So like with context, you go, okay, this guy's going from offensive to extra offensive to as offensive as he can get. And that it sort of makes sense. But, you know, I'm by no means a clever writer or anything like that. I think I'm good at what I do, but people were comparing and saying, listen, you're not Ricky Gervais, you can't do that. And it's like, well, how do you think Ricky Gervais got to where he is? Do you reckon he just woke up one day and said, I'm going to start writing this shit?
How many people were you performing to in that show?
Sorry, what was that?
How many people were you performing to in that particular show?
1,700.
Okay, and you got them all laughing like, Jesus. Like,
yeah. That was my biggest show I've ever done, and I was stoked to have all those people. It was insane, you know. As I said, like a couple of years ago, I was on the same night as you in Marrickville, and I had two fucking people in the crowd. And then in Sydney, 4 or 5 years later, I've got 1,600 people paying good money to come and see me. Insane.
That's great.
Oh, mate, I'm very, very pleased. But yeah, as you said, you get all those people happy, laughing, having a good time, and yet it's not funny. Come on.
Well, it's not funny to someone who wasn't there, really, isn't it? I mean, I guess you've just got to give it that much energy.
Exactly.
They weren't there. Fuck, you're not going to like it. They're never going to buy your album.
No.
So why would you even pander any further?
Well, that's why I didn't apologize. That's why I didn't apologize. I don't want to appeal to people like that who freak out over everything. Fuck that.
Well, yeah. That's, I mean, I don't, as soon as you start apologizing for jokes,
you're not worth what you're waiting, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question about, because you are, well, as far as Melbourne, people in Melbourne who do comedy goes, you're very outspoken. No one else speaks about anyone at all, you know, unless you're trying to cancel someone. What is the reaction to people like yourself who question the status quo going on there?
I don't know. I don't really care. You know, if I see something that I feel strong about, I'll say something. But that's why I got into comedy.
Yes.
I thought we could do that. We could be honest. Hey, I think this is bullshit. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Someone can either explain why it isn't bullshit or agree with you. You know, it's either way. But there's this kind of fear that you will get ostracized quite a bit, and I do to a degree. There's places that won't book me, but you know, they pay $5, so who gives a shit?
Why? It's not worth the time.
Yeah, like so long as I can get work, I'll get work despite them. So that's all that really matters to me. And I surround myself with people who are outspoken and are funny. So I can have a frank conversation with someone. If I don't like something, I'm with the kind of person I can say, hey, that's shit, and not get offended.
What about for young blokes coming up in those scenes? Do you see these dudes a bit concerned about what they can talk about? Like, are they you know, walking on eggshells?
There's quite a few young open micers down here that just don't give a shit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they just do their own comedy. They're still learning, so they're not as funny as they could be, but they're becoming funnier and funnier as they go. But then there's this very style of comedy that is very safe and very, and it's almost men are, oh, I'm like, I'm nervous. I'm they're almost getting you to feel sorry for them, you know, which I hate. It's like, oh God.
Like,
I got really stressed today. It's like, oh, fucking grow up.
I guess that manly sort of attitude where you walk out and you're like, right, this is what's happening, yada, yada, yada. If you're aggressive on stage or you have a strong stage presence, people fucking hate that. People freak out, you know. Like at that open mic night that I did the other week, I started yelling at someone in the front row and everyone was just like, they were taken back, like I was angry. They're like, oh, were you all right up there? I was like, yeah, that's just sometimes what I do. Yeah. If a joke bombs, you got to do something.
Well, I don't want people talking about their feelings because I don't give a fuck. No. I just want to hear a joke.
Yeah.
I'm here for you to make me laugh.
Yeah.
I don't fuck what you think or how you felt yesterday.
Well, that man, you know, I hate to argue on that, but always go back to this point about Hannah Gadsby. Like, her special was, it was a TED Talk mixed with comedy. And if people enjoyed that, then that's fantastic. It wasn't for me, whatever. But don't go to a comedy show expecting everyone to make a valiant point, a great point about everything and try and change the world. Sometimes you just want to tell about someone jerking off on someone. Like, who gives a fuck?
Or whatever you want to talk about. Yeah, Hannah Gadsby, I didn't find it funny. And that's not to say it wasn't funny. It's just not my style of comedy.
Yeah.
I just don't find it funny.
But you're, so,
she wouldn't find my comedy.
No. And you probably wouldn't like, you wouldn't like her music. You wouldn't like her music style and she wouldn't like yours and whatever. She wouldn't like the same games as you, you know? It's just different people, different strokes for different folks.
I think so. Good on her. I'm glad she's doing well. I'm glad you're doing well.
Thanks, bro.
It's a great job.
It is. It's wonderful.
It's a great job and I've done it for 20 years without having a real job, you know, and I've traveled the world. It's so much fun.
Man, it's all I ever wanted to do when I was a kid was this, and to find a way to do it was just amazing. Like, I know a lot of people look down on the whole, the YouTube way to do it, but I'm telling you, it fucking works. It's the best way to reach people. Like, look at right now, I can reach all these amazing people who have taken the time to subscribe to my channel or whatever, and I can do it from sitting in my fucking house, in the bunker, you know? Like, it's the best way to do it. And I was, you know, I was in Newcastle and I'd have to travel 2.5 hours back just to do 5 minutes for free, or I can make a 10-minute video and it could be seen by a million people potentially. But that just makes sense, right?
You just made your own videos.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So I started opening for some guys who were big on YouTube at the time. And I thought, well, why don't I just do this? I want to be a comedian, but doing the open mic scene just ain't cutting it for me, you know?
Yeah. Look, it's especially when you're doing it your own way, you get to do whatever the fuck you want to do. You're not subject to the rules and fucking hoops you got to jump through to get into the Melbourne Comedy Festival and everything else. And you find your audience and just give them what they want.
Yeah, the people.
So I felt really sorry for what was it? Who's that? Kevin Wilson.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's so racist. Because it was from the fucking 80s.
Yeah.
You know, that everyone was doing it back then. Like, it's not saying it's right, but that it was on main television. That's what the culture was. Fast forward, all that sort of stuff. It's just how it was.
Fast Forward, for those of you who don't know, was a sketch comedy show, right? And there's brown face in there and all that type of stuff. People would, they wouldn't cop all it now.
Also, look, Kingswood Country, all those, all that, that wasn't part of our, that was a part of our history. That's where comedy came from. It's evolved as everything does, but it started off like everything, started off really basic.
And to go almost, back, and
try, almost dumb. But.
Yeah, but and that's I guess that's how you lure people in. It's with anything. You show them what they want, and then you sort of lure them in, trust them, or they trust you rather, and then you give them what you want to give them. That's certainly the way I sort of angled my marketing of myself. You know, I'd make videos that I know would go well, and then I'd talk about subjects that are a bit fringe, just so that I could make what I wanted to make. But my point in the whole thing is, if people are listening to this who are a young comedian, man, you have got female, whatever you happen to be, get your stuff online and make some stuff and talk about some shit and write some jokes. It is, I know people will look down on you and they'll judge you and they'll think you're not a real comedian. Fuck it. Get on there and do it. Yeah. It's the best way to reach an audience.
Well, there's no money to be made in the club sets.
No.
There's no money to be made in clubs anymore. Unless you're doing your own show or you're touring, you can't stay still and make money in a fucking club. No one's paying.
Unless you're in New York and you can do five sets a night, what city
is that? We have what? Melbourne has one major fucking club. And Sydney has what? A couple.
Yeah.
Brisbane has one.
Mm.
So, and a shitload of open mic nights.
Yeah, and they're all free too, so you won't get any cash.
Yeah, no money.
It's a tough. I don't know why people. I don't know why I try to do it.
Yeah, I would have done it. I'm just terrible. I'm fucking 50 years old. I look at computers and that. I'm really surprised I managed to get the Zoom going.
You nailed it first go. I don't know what you're talking about. So what's next for you? Once, well, obviously you can't go on cruise ships for the next 10 years because they're fucking
God, I really don't know. I'm writing a with David Tolk and Matt O'Neill. We're writing a sitcom based in the gold mining days.
Okay.
Like 1850s. So we're going to try and get a bit of, it's fun because we're doing a bit of, looking up a bit of history and getting to that. So that's just keeping us busy for now. And hopefully that'll go. I've got a movie role next year.
What?
It was meant to be this year, but with the bushfire stopped it, and then the corona fucked it completely. So,
what movie? What are we talking?
Over next year, it's called Reggie Ditch.
Okay.
I probably shouldn't fucking talk too much about it, but it's great script. Great script.
Australian film, obviously.
Australian film, yeah.
Fantastic.
I had a good role in that. So I've never really done acting before, but so that'll be a bit of fun.
You're good.
Yeah.
It's I did some voiceover work for some guys from Stepmates in Melbourne there, and they've got a new show coming out on Channel 10. And to the acting point that you were just saying, like, I'd never done any acting or voice acting, and, man, I was there for fucking hours for this, like, 4 or 5 pages of dialogue, just doing the same line over and over again, just yelling it, now doing it softly, now scream it. It's just like, oh my God, I'd much rather just yell at a camera or do an hour set on stage and then be done for the day. So much easier. Yeah,
that'll do.
Fuck. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for coming on, mate. Where can people...
You're welcome, man. You're welcome.
Thanks, brother. Where can people find you?
On Facebook, I suppose. I'm under the name Rank Sanctimus now because I call so much shit.
What's the go with that name?
I just got sick of people getting onto my wife and attacking anyone I know just because I call them a cunt here and there.
And they do that. That's what one thing with cancel culture is. They will go after everything they can. Man, I had so many people going up to like sponsors of mine of my videos and saying, do you agree with what he said? Do you think this joke was funny? It's like, what the fuck do you want them to say?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I go under the name Rank Phantom. I saw Chris Wainhouse on Facebook, Twitter. I never get onto Twitter anymore. That's just,
it's a mess.
I don't even dip my toe in that fucking pool.
It's a fucking anxiety infusing. You look at that joint, you're saying, who the fuck are these people and what is going on?
Yeah, it used to be so much fun though. I used to use it as a joke writing exercise and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
and a really good tool, but now it's just so fucking angry.
Mate, just stay locked in your house. It's the only safe place.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, Chris Wainhouse, thank you very much.
Having you, man.
Thank you very much, brother. Thank you for your support as well. I do appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Wainhouse. If you haven't got onto Chris, go and check out his clips on YouTube and go and follow him on all his social medias. We will link them down below. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Be a good motherfucker. Peace, Middle East, be extinct. I'll see you all very soon. Toodaloo, wah, wah, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.